citation to statistical mechanics. Is a work that has been done in collaboration with Thiago de Oliveira, that now is a professor in Rio de Janeiro, and with Stefan Haas and Paolo Zanardi, and at the time. So, maybe in the audience there are people coming from different backgrounds, so I want to make this slide, and I hope that I can convey a very simple message to everybody. And the message is the following. So I wanted to show that it is possible to provide justifications for the effectiveness of statistical mechanics starting from quantum mechanics. And from this it follows also that a nice connection to a very well corroborated macroscopic theory, thermodynamics. And I like this connection because it's an instance of the way to try to merge microscopic theories with the macroscopic world. So the people that have given major contribution to thermodynamics are, for example, Joule and Sadi Carnot. For statistical mechanics, we have Boltzmann and Gibbs, and at the quantum mechanics floor, we have von Neumann and Schrödinger. So what is the problem? Thermodynamic, as I said, is a highly corroborated theory, but it's phenomenological. So, since ever, basically, people have tried to provide microscopic foundations for the effectiveness of thermodynamics, and the way in which typically this is done is merging a classical microscopic theory with statistical mechanics, and then there are known recipes that justify the use of some kind of macroscopic variables in thermodynamics that have a statistical mechanic handle. But the problem is that we would like also to find a justification for some of the prescriptions that statistical mechanics gives to us. So how can we explain the effectiveness of statistical mechanics? So normally you can do this, but you have to assume the validity of some principle like ergodicity and the principle of equal a priori probability. These are principles that are very hard to prove in general, and I will try to show you that actually with quantum mechanics one can provide a justification for the effectiveness of the statistical mechanics ensemble. So, of course, this is a very cold topic, and since the beginning, quantum mechanics founding fathers like von Neumann and Schrödinger were aware of these kind of problems and tried to solve it, and in fact, they did. But recently, there's been this work done by Popescu et al. That interested again the community on this kind of topic. So the connection between quantum mechanics and the foundational problems in statistical mechanics. So the way in which they pose the problem is the following. Suppose that we are considering a closed Hilbert space in the universe that is characterized by some restriction, R. So we will call this closed total Hilbert space H sub R. And this Hilbert space is bipartite. So there is a subsystem part and there is an environment part. Now, we want to find a way to have a good description of the state associated to the subsystem. So we want to find a way to build a good state, the quantum state that describes what happens in the H sub S. So the typical statistical mechanics recipe to do this is to assume, since we don't have much information about the total system H sub R, is to assume that the state in H sub R is the microcanonical state. So it's the equal superposition of all the states, the pure states in the space H sub R, divided by the dimension. Then what you do, and I call this is a bar, so the microcanonical state. Then what you have to do in order to get the state for the subsystem H sub S is to trace out the environment, and this will provide you a sort of general canonical state. So the authors in this work suggested a different route to solve the problem of getting a description of the state in the subsystem. And these alternative ways are following. So take a random state, phi, in the total Hilbert space H sub R. Random in the sense of the R measure. So it generates an ensemble of state that is uniformly distributed in the Hilbert space H sub R. Then you trace out, again, the environment, and you get the state rho sub S. Now the problem is to compare these two recipes for the description of the subsystem. So we want to compare rho sub S with the omega sub S. The very interesting thing is the following. So basically they state their results in the following form as a principle of apparently equal a priori probability, which states that given a sufficiently small subsystem of the universe, almost every pure state of the universe is such that the subsystem is approximately in the canonical state. So basically this means that when you have taken this random state in the total system, you have traced out the environment and you are left with a random density matrix, a reduced density matrix for the subsystem, most of the time this reduced density matrix will be very close to the statistical mechanic description, to the generalized canonical ensemble. A mathematical way of saying what I just said at the qualitative level is the following. So they provided a way to bound the probability of making a bad guess. So this with D, so here the rho microcanonical is actually this omega sub S. So this is a measure of distance, like the trace distance in between rho sub S and the omega sub S. This distance is parameterized by some quantity that can be taken small as you like. So imagine that this is a small quantity. And the probability that they are far apart, more than some small quantity, will decrease exponentially with the dimension of the total Hilbert space H sub R. So here the parameter are the dimension of the Hilbert space, the total Hilbert space H sub R, epsilon, that is a measure of a lower bound for the distance in between the two. And here, in this distance, enters also the parameter that describes the dimension of the subsystem and an effective dimension for the depth. I can tell you later. Yeah?
Yeah, why is the interest here in the microcanonical state rather than a canonical state, which would require you to have to know what the temperature is? Or
well, because
the microcanonical state has no parameter in it.
Yes.
So this might be a kind of empty result if you wanted to.
Well, actually, they show that their result is consistent also with the derivation for for the canonical, for the Boltzmann distribution.
At what temperature?
Well, that is set by, I guess, the particular constraint that you impose at the beginning. But in order to derive that, you have to consider. So that, in a sense, this is a very general result, right? Because I didn't specify any temperature and anything. Then if you, in order to obtain the Boltzmann, a Boltzmann-like kind of reduced density matrix, you have to assume also that the interaction in between the system and the environment is small. So you have to provide more constraint on the Hamiltonian that describes your system. Mm-hmm. But this can be done, and this, again, consistent with this approach. The thing that, to me, according to me, is very nice is that this approach is very general. So what they say is just consider a Hilbert space that satisfies, characterized by some kind of constraint, and then you can pick your favorite constraint. If this Hilbert space is big enough, when you pick a state at random in it, you will see that considering the reduced density matrix with respect to some environment, that resulting state that is random will be almost all of the time very close to a generalized, this is the reason for which I put the adjective generalized, canonical state. So the canonical state describes the subsystem. The microcanonical state describes the total system. And it's generalized canonical state because of this, because you put as many constraints, so you put just few constraints.
Right. Yeah. So this is closely related, but let me just confirm that I understand. So you assume you're at the microcanonical state on this restricted space E.
Yes.
But then when you write down here at the bottom of the transparency you just left.
Yes.
Is that a typo then to write rho S as the microcanonical state? Like, shouldn't
no,
that be
rho is so yes, this is a bad notation. But rho is actually this omega S. So it's the phrase with respect to the environment. You substitute this rho sub NC with the phrase with respect to the environment of the microcanonical.
But the point is that won't necessarily be a microcanonical state on the subsystem space.
No, exactly. It depends on the, for example, the Newtonian and all these kinds of things. Yes. But you can call it a generalized canonical state in the sense that relates to the subsystem. But again, so at this general and not too much specialized level, anyway, this result is quite surprising. And it provides a sort of qualitative explanation for the reason why the microcanonical state, for example, is a good ansatz. It's not because there is something special about the microcanonical state. It's just because when the hyperspace is big enough, any state will do almost all of the time the job of the microcanonical state. So you will not be able to distinguish observable in between the two if you take a subsystem that is small enough compared to the bubble, and if you take a total hyperspace that is big enough. Okay, so as I said, these results is nice, at least I think so, but there are some problems. So, problems in the sense that there is something that we would like to understand more. So, simply the entire Hilbert space could not be necessary, right? So the microcanonical state from which we started from assumes that all the bases in the Hilbert space are equal weight. But maybe this is also something that seems a bit weird. Maybe out there one could think that the system can have some constraints and can privilege some states with respect to others. So, and then the other thing is that it is very difficult to generate a state at random. So what I said before depends on the kind of probability distribution that you assume from the beginning for the states, random states that you pick in the total Hilbert space. And that distribution has to be, at least for these results, is the R distribution. But it's very well known that to generate a random state in a Hilbert space that is big, but where big can mean, or I mean 12, 13 qubits, for example, it can take a very, very long time. So we would like to consider the problem restricting the parameter necessary to specify this random state. So we want just to say if it is possible to have this sort of result when the state that we consider are a small portion of the total Hilbert space. So the previous results that I show you provides an upper bound on the probability of some event. So this is known in the literature as a typicality or measure concentration phenomenon. And qualitatively, it just states the fact that if the dimension of the space over which you are sampling is big enough, then given some constraints, the probability for something to happen will be very high. Or in the previous results, I said the opposite. I said that the probability for something not to happen, so for these two states to be closed, is very small. But the meaning is the same. So, and basically, again, another way of thinking about it is to say that imagine that you generate some random variable. So this random variable will be described as some distribution. This distribution will have a mean value and a variance. When you increase the space over which you are sampling, you have typicality if the variance of this distribution is decreasing very fast with the size of your sampling space. And in this case, that's why it's called concentration of measure. The measure, the probability distribution, gets concentrated around its mean value. So now we want to consider if it is possible to have this kind of probabilistic property when the random state over which we are sampling just spans a small portion of the total Hilbert space. To satisfy a sort of constraint of choosing states that are a bit more physical and easily parameterized, we decided to consider an ensemble of random matrix product states. So now I am focusing to one-dimensional system. But the results that I obtain, I think I have yet to prove it, but I think that are easily generalizable to higher dimension. But nevertheless, now we are considering a one-dimensional system, one-dimensional distribution. So we want to construct the most set of physically relevant states and check if typicality apply. Physically relevant because in one dimension, people have shown that forgetful Hamiltonian MPS are very, very good approximation of the ground state of the system. So if we assume that by physically relevant states are ground states, then, for example, these kind of states are an instance of physically relevant state. And then the good thing about MPS is that they can be parameterized by an exponentially smaller number of parameters with respect to general states. So we are really considering an exponentially small portion of the total Hilbert space. Okay, so now I will, this slide is technically important in the sense that here I tell you what I mean by MPS and what I mean by random matrix product state that is usually referred to as MPS. So the way in which I will define the matrix product state is by telling you how you can construct. So if you look at this picture, here I have a chain of capital N 2-bits, let's say, but the dimension of the local Hilbert space doesn't matter. And I also have an ancilla space whose state on this side is characterized by phi sub I and phi sub f on the other side. And these are sort of boundary conditions. And the dimension for the ancillary space can be different. I will denote it in general as chi, while the dimension of the local physical space will be capital D for a qubit is simply 2. So we can construct an MPS if setting all the qubit in the physical space equal to 0 and choosing an initial state for the ancilla space. We apply a unitary matrix to these two input states of the Hilbert space. From this unitary, we get an output that belongs to the physical space, corresponding to this line, and an output that corresponds to the leaves in the ancillary space, and is denoted by this other line. This ancillary output will become the input for the next application of the same unitary on the second qubit. If you iterate this construction for n times, and then at the end you project on the ancillary space over the other boundary state phi sub f, and then you look just at the states that you obtain at the level of the physical space, what you have is a state that you can write in this way. So it will be a linear combination of the basis state for the physical Hilbert space, and the coefficients of this expansion are product of matrices A, and these A matrices are just subblocks of the unitary U. So the unitary U is, as a dimension, chi times D times chi times D. And you just want to consider a subblock of it in order to build the A matrices that characterize the MPS, the matrix product state. So in general, I will denote with Greek letters the degrees of freedom of the ancillary space, and by Latin letters, the degrees of freedom of the physical space. So the I runs over the possible value of the basis of in the local physical space, while alpha and beta runs over chi different possible values, the basis in the ancillary space. So this construction was proposed in this paper, and they show that actually any open boundary condition matrix product state can be constructed in this way for a particular unitary, you construct a particular one. So the way in which we wanted to use this construction in order to generate random matrix product state is very simple. We just say that these unitaries that enter in the construction are hard distributed unitary matrices. So this will induce a measure on a set of pure states with open boundary condition according to this construction, but you can also generalize the construction to periodic boundary condition states, where now the coefficient will be just given by the trace of the product of the matrices that are each A matrices.
Are the unitaries all equal or are they?
So there are two cases, and we consider both of them. When they are all equal, we refer to homogeneous matrix rack state, and when they are different, we refer to them as non-homogeneous matrix rack state. Some of the results depend on this difference, not the general one related to the concentration of measure, but for example, the average state of this ensemble will depend, of course, from the fact that you take homogeneous or non-homogeneous unitary matrices.
Okay, sorry, and yeah. You mean with this expression the case in which they are identical?
Yes, so
they are all independent?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
These two extremes.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And then if you want, you can interpolate, you can think of correlation between the unitaries, but these are the cases that we consider. So open boundary condition and periodic boundary condition. By open boundary condition, I mean that the matrix product state is characterized by the product of these A matrices that are going to construct. But then this has to be a coefficient, right? So you have to take the expectation value with respect to some vectors. In the case of open boundary conditions, that expectation value is provided by the state of the ancilla at the beginning and at the end of the construction. If you want to consider a periodic boundary condition, the prescription that we give in order to generate this state is just to take the trace of these A matrices that are sublots of the unitaries.
So what is, in this big box on top, right, this is basically a circuit diagram, right, where you're coupling some.
Yes.
So how does the periodic boundary condition arise?
Well, no, okay, so you cannot build a periodic boundary condition with this scheme. What I just want to say is that if you need to consider a periodic boundary condition, you can still think of generating a random matrix product state where you take n unitaries generated at random and you consider the same subblocks of before. And considering the subblocks is nice because they give you a nice property for the normalization of these states. So basically all of these states are normalized because this can be easily seen because they depend on the unitary. And, but again, so there are many possible ways that one could have chosen in order to generate random states of this form, because this is basically the definition of the matrix product state, and one could say, okay, let me take just the A matrices from the start, it could belong to, they could be all unitaries, for example, or they could belong to some random matrix ensemble. We prefer to choose this kind of construction because, in a sense, it is operationally well-motivated. So this thing tells you that if you have to implement at a small scale, this construction, that is a simple description for a possible experiment. So you have to make interacting your qubit with some other kind of field, and you can iterate this procedure. And more concretely, the other good thing is that when you want to have analytic results, having a hard distributed unitaries is very useful. So we wanted to keep that constraint, but also allowing us to be sure that we can span all the possible matrix products, and this is guaranteed by this construction. So now we want to see if it is possible to have this concentration of measure of typicality for this ensemble of random matrix product state. As I said before, they are characterized by an exponentially smaller number of parameters with respect to the general possible state that you can pick in the total Hilbert space. We have not set yet all the possible constraints for these states. So we have to think if it is possible to have typicality when the A matrices that characterize the states have a constant size. So told you before, concentration of measure happen at some point where you increase the size of the total hyperspace, right? So what I want to say by a constant size A matrix is, if while I keep increasing the size of the total hyperspace, do the size of the A matrix has to be constant? Or can I allow for the size chi of this matrix to scale with the total size of the system? So now I want to convince you that chi cannot be constant if we want to have a concentration of measure result. So chi has been shown, these are very well-known results from matrix product state, that chi represents a sort of correlation F. So it tells you if this square represents my subsystem, chi tells you how far apart is the subsystem correlated with the environment. So if you say that the size chi has to be constant while you are increasing the environment, basically there will be a point when the size of the total system is higher, is greater than this correlation length, where the environment that should be farther apart more than chi will not affect any more of the state in the subsystem, just because they are uncorrelated. So it will not matter if you keep increasing. What happens to the subsystem will just depend on an environment whose size is set by chi. So chi is a sort of measure of the effective environment. So we need to consider chi scaling in some way with n. But I want also to... we also know that chi has not to scale exponentially with the size of the environment, because in that case, then you will recover all the states in your total hyperspace. So the nice thing with matrix product state is that they allow you to use just few parameters in order to describe the state. If you use an exponentially big number of exponentially big size of the A matrices, you will go back to the case where the number of parameters you need is exponentially big in the size of the system. So we have to look for something in between, and we have to hope that measure concentration can happen when we consider a scaling of chi that is, for example, polynomial in the size of the system. So, okay, so we have this hope.
Your system size d to the n?
Yes, so, yeah, sorry. N, capital N, is the size of the system and the dimension of the...
N is the number of the
system. N is the size of the system, so it's the number of qubits.
It's the number of qubits.
Yes. And D sub N will denote, or D sub H, depending on which notation I have used, will denote the dimension, so it will be some exponential in N. Okay. So we have this hope that for a polynomially, for a chi scaling polynomial in N, maybe we can have measure concentration, but we can also maybe do some numerical simulation and check if this is possible. So here I show you the plot on the left side, left hand side. I show you the variance of a local observable. So I choose a spin, a qubit, in my spin chain, and I measure the expectation value of sigma s with respect to this set ensemble of state that I generate at random. So I do this for different value of chi's. And this curve, basically from the top to the bottom, represents how the variance of this local observable changes while I am increasing n is the size of the total system, and l is the size, so the number of qubits in the subsystem. In this case, it's just one. So this is the size of the BEF. So I am increasing the size of the BEF. I look how the variance goes for each curve for a fixed value of chi. So for example, the first curve is chi 2. So the A matrices are 2 by 2 matrices, random, and I sample over that space, and I evaluate the variance of that quantity. I can see that it decreases, and very soon starts to be constant. And this is exactly because of what I said before. The correlations between the subsystem and the environment are bounded by chi. So when I increase the size of the environment farther away, it will not affect anymore the local observable. in the subsystem. But what I see also is that if I choose a value of chi that is greater and greater and greater, the moment at which I will reach a stationary value will be postponed in the size. So on the right side, I show you the same thing, but here I sample over matrix product state, and I, for each value of the environment, of the size of the environment, I allow for chi to be exactly the size of the environment. So, in, so this tells me that chi, in this case, is a scaling point, is a scaling linearly, basically with the size of the environment. And then I can see that the variances of is observable, local observable, keeps decreasing. So this is a good indication that probably there is a measured concentration. Actually, this is, in a way, a numerical proof of the fact that for this particular observable, you have measured concentration. And this also tells us that maybe we can try and hope to prove analytically that there is measured concentration.
I have a question. Yes. So do you describe the system and the environment by matrix product states?
Yes, I just...
Instead of this, just the system, the whole somehow...
Yes, my matrix product state is a state of the total space. So,
how do you somehow justify, you initially mentioned this, somehow the matrix product state describes the ground state of the gap Hamiltonian, but you are saying that the system and the environment is the ground state of the some Hamiltonian, or the...
Yes, here there is no Hamiltonian. I am really following the... So at the beginning, when I showed, I told you about the work by Popescu et al., what they show is exactly this. So if, even though you don't specify the Hamiltonian, but you just say that you pick a state at random in a total Hilbert space, then with a very high probability, when you look at a subsystem, so at the reduced density matrix of this state, that reduced density matrix will be very close to the one, to the generalized, in this sense, again, the meaning of generalized is important, canonical state. Generalized because you haven't specified, for example, an Hamiltonian. You can specify the Hamiltonian, but in that case, you have to say what are the states that you want to consider. For example, a way to do it would be I specify my Hamiltonian, and this can constrain in some way the random state, the random ensemble of state that I am generating. So they have to be, I don't know, to be the should belong to, could have an energy that belongs to a particular shell around some value. So I pick random states that are such that their energy with respect to the Hamiltonian is inside some shell, small shell, around some value. And in that case, okay, you can do the same thing and you have an Hamiltonian. Here there is no Hamiltonian. But still, the question if it is possible to have measured concentration is very. Because it's, again, it's a very general way of approaching the problem. Then you can add more constraint, like putting an Hamiltonian, and you will go to more, let's say, physically and condensed matter related problems, right? But this is really a fundamental and general question that can be specialized to some specific problem.
Okay, yeah, I see your point, but basically your environment is not really environment, but basically you somehow have this system and you split into two parts, and you have one part of the system, and basically you are calculating the reduced density matrix, and this is somehow the property of the reduced density matrix?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So did I ask
for
your question?
Yeah, that's fine. Right.
So as I said, now we want to prove analytically that there can be a measured concentration phenomenon, and I will not go into the technicalities, but I want to tell you at least what is the method that one uses in this kind of proofs. So first of all, we have to rely on some concentration of measure results related to the unitary group. Since our initial source of randomness are unitary matrices, measure concentration has been a topic of research in the mathematical literature since almost 100 years. And so in this book, for example, one can find the kind of results that we need related to the unitary matrices. So that in some cases they provide quantities derived from random unitary matrices have a major concentration phenomenon. And the other ingredient that we need in order to prove our results is an upper bound on the fluctuations of the random variables that we are building from our random matrix product state. Like, for example, the random variable is the expectation value of an observable, a local observable. And we have to provide a bound on its fluctuations, because if the random variable that we choose fluctuates crazy, then we cannot expect to have measured concentration. So this upper bound, so we derive this upper bound on the fluctuation, and that is basically in this form. So it goes linearly with the size of the total system, and exponentially with the size of the subsystem. But this exponential scaling is not a problem in the sense that we can stick, for example, to a fixed system size. And this will just tell us that we need to consider subsystem that are exponentially small with respect to the total system. But I will come back to this point later when I compare our results with the previous general result. So, provided these two results, then one can write a statement of this form. So again, one can bound the probability for our phi is an instance of our random matrix product state, f of phi is an instance of a random variable, like the expectation value of a local observable, and by this notation I mean the average value of the random variable f of phi. So the probability that these two guys are far apart more than epsilon is upper bounded by a quantity that depends on eta here in this way, where eta is this one. And it depends on the dimension that of the space from which we are sending our random variable. Now I will specialize this expression for our case. So our results are the following. Now, in the case of the expectation values of local observables, what we can prove is the following, is that the probability that f, the expectation value of a local observable with respect to a matrix for random matrix for a state, is far apart from, now again I change notation, sorry about that, this denotes the average value of this random variable. So the probability that they are far apart more than epsilon is exponentially smaller in the value of chi that is a function of the size n over n squared. So this tells you that analytically we prove that if chi scales more than quadratically with the size of the total system, then when the system size is big enough, this quantity will go down. So if you fix epsilon small as much as you like, you will reach a point where the size of the system is big enough for your random variable to be almost, with a very high probability, close to its average value. Okay. The second results that we can derive from the previous and some other considerations, so is a typicality result for the reduced density matrix of the subsystem. So we can show that the reduced density matrix will be very close to the canonical state of the subsystem with a very high probability if, again, chi has to scale. So let me start from here. So here we want to bound the probability that the distance measured by the trace norm in between the reduced density matrix of the system, that is a random density matrix, and its average value, that is basically the canonical state for the third reason that I will describe you in a second. So, but anyway, from the probability that they are far apart more than this quantity can be bounded by this other quantity. From here, it's clear that the subsystem, so in order to, for this bound to be meaningful, it's necessary that the subsystem is exponentially small with respect to the total system size. But again, from a practical point of view, this can be a problem. But at the conceptual level, I can imagine that I am really considering a subsystem of fixed size. Then the scaling that I am interested in is the scaling in n. So it's true that n at some point will be very, very big, and that bound will be satisfied. And still, the size of the density of the, so the number of parameters that I need to characterize my random state given by chi will still be such that I am considering an exponentially small part of the total hyperspace. So this is still a meaningful result. And
capital L is the size of the subsystems?
Yes.
I mean, you mentioned the other space of the subsystems.
No, it's the number of qubits in the subsystem.
I thought that was capital L.
No, capital N is the number of qubits in the total system.
Oh, I see, total system versus the subsystem.
Yes, right. If I use some dimension, then there will be D with subscripts. But here, all the both capital N and capital L are the number of qubits, what is also called the size in this sense of the system. And okay, so the third result that I think is also interesting is the fact that in the case of non-homogeneous random matrix polar states, so the initial random matrices are different and independent from each other. So in that case, you can evaluate the average state in the total hyperspace. And it turns out that that average state is precisely the microcanonical state. So it's the identity divided by the dimension of the total hyperspace. Here I use this notation because that state can be originated considering an ensemble in random matrix product theory that is known as a circular unitary ensemble. But anyway, these are just, you generate a random unitary matrix distributed uniformly. And you take, for example, the first column. This will give you a random state, general state in the hyperspace. You do it many times. And the average state that you obtain will prove that it's the same as the average state that you obtain while you restrict just the smaller portion of that hyperspace.
So all of these results, in the original Popescu argument, they assume there's some restriction, and then you trace out they assume the restriction. You presented it as restriction, which is some kind of energy constraint on the system plus environment.
Could be, yes.
And then you trace out the environment, and you look at the subsystem state.
Yes.
Now, are you imposing such a restriction in this, or are you just allowing
No, in a sense, so that the restriction can be general, and so it means that it has also not to be specified. You can say that I am considering. So since that is a closed system, basically what they did was really just generating random states in some hyperspace. Then what physically characterizes that hyperspace, you don't have to specify from this point of view.
If I want to understand these results in that picture, I would assume there was no restriction applied. You just take
If you want, yes. And so in that, and that's why, for example, the statistical mechanical point of view tells you take the uniform distribution of all the bases state in that hyperspace. And here you can do again the same thing, and you will see that the average state is that one. If you merge these results together with this, so this average subsystem state will be just again the generalized canonical state, because these two are the same. So this tells you that even at the level of random matrix product state, the generalized canonical state is nothing special. It's just that almost all of the state that you pick at random, if this hyperspace is big enough, will do the same job.
This is just because integrating over all unitaries is like tracing and replacing an independent
Yes.
So you don't need to use all the pure states, but any.
In a sense, yeah.
If you want.
I wanted to compare our bounds with those obtained for general state. So this is, for example, for local observable, this is what we have. The probability of having a random value for the expectation value of our observable that is far apart more than epsilon from its average value, as we said, can be bounded by a quantity that scales exponentially in the size, so in the number of qubits of the total hyperspace. The results that has been obtained for general states is stronger, because so here basically is just a different notation for the same quantity. O sub s is an observable in the subsystem. Rho sub s is again a random state for the subsystem. And this omega sub s is the generalized canonical state. So it's the trace with respect to the environment of the microcanonical state. So the same thing, the probability of these two guys being far apart more than epsilon scales goes exponentially to zero in the dimension of the total Hilbert space R because of H sub R. H sub R. So this means doubly exponentially in the size n of the total subsystem. And in this sense, it's stronger. But again, so here we are constraining much more, exponentially more in the sense of our state. So one can expect that probably the results are also weaker. But still, viewed from a conceptual point of view, thinking of the foundation of statistical mechanics. And for the distance in between and the reduced density matrices, so our result is this one. And the results for general state is this other one. And okay, so here it appears a prefactor that is exponential in the dimension, but again, if you consider an environment that is polynomially bigger than the subsystem, you are in good shape, and again, you can obtain an exponentially smaller bound in the dimension. For our case, in order to be in good shape, so to have a meaningful result, we have to consider a subsystem that is exponentially smaller with respect to the total system. But we have more constraints and we can expect to have a weaker result. So, okay, so basically, this is what I wanted to present to you. And so there are quite a few things that we think would be nice to investigate more. So first of all, we have introduced a new ensemble of random states. And from a more mathematical point of view, this is an interesting object per se. So it would be nice to better understand what are the properties of this ensemble. Like evaluating moments and connection to the uniformly distributed random state, since, as I said, it's difficult to generate them. Maybe this kind of ensemble could provide a way to approximate those states. And the second thing is also to introduce Hamiltonians, so to make these reasonings more physical from a practical point of view. And so one has to find a way to generate these Hamiltonian and connect them with random matrix product state. So maybe this consideration that I'm making doesn't go along the direction of his question, but so these kind of states can naturally suggest also the construction of an ensemble of random Hamiltonians that are just the parent Hamiltonians for each of these states. The parent Hamiltonian is the Hamiltonian for which the MPS is its ground state. So maybe, again, these Hamiltonians can turn out to be useful in the same way in which, for example, when Dyson introduced random matrix theory in order to study properties of physical systems like nuclei, he obtained physically meaningful results from abstract construction. So the other nice possible application is the connection with algorithm. So here I have introduced random state. So there is some kind of stochastic sampling procedure that is going on, and this is at the basis of a technique like quantum Monte Carlo or Monte Carlo scheme. Furthermore, these are matrix product states, and again, those states are the basis of techniques like YAMRG or families of MIRA or whatever you like. And it would be nice to see if it is possible to merge these two algorithmic techniques and using properties deriving from concentration of measure for building efficient computational schemes. So then the other natural step is also to look for stronger bounds than the one we found. And I personally, I think that this should be possible. And And then the last thing is to consider systems in higher dimension. And I think that this can be done more easily. Okay, so in conclusion, I show you that random matrix product state show the measure of concentration phenomenon given some constraints, but in a meaningful way. And I show you that the general canonical principle, so the fact that if your hyperspace or the hyperspace is big enough, then almost all of the random reduced density matrices will be very close to the generalized canonical state. This principle is holds true also for random matrix product state, although in a weaker sense. And so this is more a consideration. I think that random matrix product state provides a new interesting ensemble that deserves some more study. And thank you for the attention.
So, question?
Yes. So thank you for the talk. One thing I was wondering about, so you were motivated, I mean, obviously this problem of assuming a hard random state is a bit unmotivated from the physical point of view. Well, let's not say it's unmotivated, but it requires some motivation. Mm-hmm. And you were arguing that these matrix product states are kind of ground states of some class of Hamiltonians?
Yes.
And so I don't know enough about that connection. So could you clarify, if we think about, you know, the full system being in the ground state of some Hamiltonian,
yes,
the sensitive issue for you was how chi scaled with n.
Yes.
What does that correspond to in terms of a Hamiltonian interaction, a constraint on the Hamiltonian interaction?
Well, let me say first that it has been shown that in one-dimensional system, if you have a gapful Hamiltonian, so a non-critical, let's say, Hamiltonian, then a good approximation for the ground state of this Hamiltonian is provided by states that are of this form, matrix product state. So this makes them physically better. In terms of the correlation, so here I need the scaling. So as I said, if I want to have a major concentration phenomenon, this is something that happens because I am sampling over a big space. But if the kind of state that I consider are constrained to have just to interact just or with a few number of qubits state in the environment, then it's clear that even if I increase the environment, that will not affect the properties of the local observable of my system. So, in a sense, I need to consider an interaction that, if you want, is critical because requiring that chi has to be like n, since chi is a sort of correlation length, this means that I want my interaction to be really to span all the system. So in this sense, you can see it as a critical state. Right?
So you need a quadratically large number of systems to be helpful?
Analytically, yes, we proved that it should be quadratically, but we didn't prove that this is the best result that you have. Numerically, when we do the simulation, just a linear scaling is enough. So this does that for sure. These are not the best results possible, but still qualitative in the sense that they are polynomial equivalent. And again, as I said, so in terms of correlation, this is interesting because it tells you that my subsystem has to be able to interact with all the system. The thing is that, so it's a bit analogous to what happens when you consider, if you pick a random state in the total hyperspace, most likely it will be highly entangled, right? So even entanglement shows these properties. And since, again, you can look at entanglement as a measure of correlation, you have that property for general state, and the way in which it is translated for this particular construction is the fact that your chi has to be of the size of the total system. So in the sense that you are as much correlated as possible for being a matrix product state. I hope I answered your question. I'm not sure I understood your question, actually.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
More questions?
Can I ask one question? So I guess I repeat my question partly, but
yes.
I think that we keep asking the here you don't impose any constraint in terms of Hamiltonian or energy.
Yes.
And I guess the My question is the, okay, I understood somehow if I consider the reduced density matrix of the matrix process, then there's some the concentration on the, these values, and I see it, but the, how do you connect the, this, the measure of the, I mean, concentration behavior into the statistical mechanics? Where somehow usually right. we say, you know, the Gibbs distribution was some
so the Gibbs, yeah, okay. So, the, so I here I don't show that you can derive the Gibbs distribution. I'll show you that you can derive what I called a generalized canonical ensemble, because I didn't put the constraint. So in order to derive the Gibbs ensemble, you need to specify an Hamiltonian, and furthermore you need to say that the interaction between the C, this the part of the Hamiltonian that describes the interaction between the subsystem and the environment, is a small with respect to the Hamiltonian of the system and the Hamiltonian of the environment.
So are you saying the weak, so the starting from this generalized the ensemble was generalized?
No, what I'm saying is just
so basically imposing different constraints, we can get to the microcanonical and canonical and grand canonical. This is what
yes, this is what I, yes, this is what I'm saying. If you add more constraints, so you specify an Hamiltonian, and you are still able to construct random states that for example, satisfy the fact of being of a given energy with respect to that Hamiltonian, that let's say I haven't proved it, but I would bet that you can explain the effectiveness of the Gibbs ensemble in the same way. People have shown this for the general state. So adding more constraint, you can show that for major concentrations reasons, the Gibbs ensemble is the good ensemble. Not because it has something special about it, but just because random states, so almost all states taken at random according to some more constraints, we'll do that.
Yeah, I see that, but I thought somehow your motivation is initially, as you mentioned, for example, in statistical mechanics, we have a lot of the heuristic assumption, like the ergodic
assumption.
And here, still, you are somehow randomly sampling, so the, do you think you can somehow get rid of the assumption?
Yes, this doesn't, this doesn't change. So in statistical mechanics, you assume, for example, the microcanonical ensemble, and then some more constraints, like saying that now consider fix the energy of your system and consider just a small shell around that energy. You do counting arguments, and then you derive the microcanonical, the canonical ensemble, the Gibbs ensemble. But you start from an ansatz. You say that I know nothing about my state, so I assume that the right state is the microcanonical ensemble. That is an ansatz. With this kind of argument, you don't have to assume that. You show that any state, almost all the state, with a very high probability, will be, in a sense, indistinguishable, will give you the same results at that point. So in a sense, this is a probabilistic justification for the effectiveness of the microcanonical assumptions. So it's really stronger.
Well, it replaces the ansatz with a different one, which is that the state of the total system is a random state.
If you want, yes.
And so it's
yeah. But it also tells you that, so here we show, so in that work they do that. Here we show that you can take also another ensemble. So you can constrain more, and maybe you can really use meaningful distributions. And again, almost all of the states will do the job. So if you could really think of, so if you think of an interpretation of the ensembles in statistical mechanics, could be that imagine you have many, many parallel universes. Each of them realizes a particular instance of that ensemble. Here it shows that in this case, almost all of the universe will behave in the same way. So, in whatever universe you are, you will do the, you will see the same thing.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you imagine universe is one-dimensional, then somehow the, it is actually unnatural to have this scaling for chi. If we have the gap scale, it is constant, and if you have critical, usually at most logarithmic in this system. So the your setting is kind of the unnatural scale.
Well,
chi must scale in quadratic in N, right?
No, I don't think necessarily. So first of all, here I really don't have any internet. So as I said, this is something that is more related to a future project. So one has to find the meaningful way of considering specific Hamiltonians and generating EPS related to that random, and then study the properties of that. Well, I would, as I told you, when I explain why a fixed chi, the size of the A matrix, if you keep it fixed, then in that case you will never have a major concentration result. So, and that is a natural explanation to me. So the fact that chi has to scale polynomially with n, to me doesn't look weird, honestly. The interpretation that I made before, saying that since chi is of the order of n, then it looks like critical, is just an interpretation. When I if I had an Hamiltonian system, then I can really check if that is a critical state or not. So it was just a way to to make an analogy, if you want, in between the fact that when you take a random state in the total Hilbert space, then most of the time they are highly entangled. So in this sense, again, almost all of the states out there, you could say, are highly entangled. And the analogous results that you have here for the constraints that we put is the fact that almost all of the state, so the state here has to be as much entangled, if you want, as they can be in the matrix by state.
Okay, just to be sure that I understood that one thing. So in the case where the unitaries are equal, in the homogeneous case, you say that you know that there is a concentration of measure, but you don't know...
Yes, I don't know what is, let's say, I don't know what is the average. Finish your question.
So can you say that in this case you have for the subsystem exactly the usual microcanonical ensemble, or
no.
You know just that there is a marginal, but we don't know.
So I know a closed expression for the average state. So in that case, let's say when the unitaries are all the same, the first two results are still valid, but it's not true anymore the third one. So that average state has a closed expression, but it's very, very difficult to...
So this would be a kind of violation of the microcanonical...
This would be a kind of violation, yes. And in a sense, if you want, this is an interesting thing, in the sense that it provides an ensemble that is different from what people have considered until now. And I don't know how much physically relevant, but at least it's curious.
And for the moment, there is no way to relate it with some known...
I haven't thought about it. Yes, it's part of... when I said that I would like to understand more the properties of this distribution of these ensemble of states, that question is included in that.
And the parameters of this state would be chi, and...
So if you want, if you...
parameterized by...
Yes, if you want the number of parameters... would be when all the unitaries are the same, then the number of parameters would just be chi d squared, right? The number of elements in the matrix, the use of size chi dot d, capital d. If they are different, it will be n times chi d squared.
Okay, so that's thanks a lot.